getting with what we're going to cover this first 45 minutes of the show, we are going to talk about the Jehovah's Witness Watchtower. I've been reading some of their website, and I am more confused now than ever before. This is the literal word of God, and they take it literal. I mean, it's beyond fire and brimstone. Tim Kosnoff, who we had on, that represents many victims in the Catholic Church here in Washington State, he's also represented people in the Jehovah's Witness suit, and we're going to have him on right after this break. We're going to hear just exactly what he's found out about this organization and what their policy on child abuse really is. You are listening to the Mark Furman Show on his birthday on KXLY 920.
You have the right to remain silent.
Except on this show.
Mark Furman is on your radio now.
Welcome back to the show. My guest now is Tim Kosnoff. He's an attorney that's represented a lot of the people that have been abused by priests in the Catholic Church. He has also handled some in the Jehovah's Witness. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Well, hi, Mark. Happy birthday. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
On.
You bet. You know, we covered a little segment of the Jehovah's Witness because I had a conversation with Mike Fitzsimmons, and, you know, he brought up a good point. You know, there are other churches, and so I sought out just exactly what he told me to do. And Rebecca and I found that there is Jehovah's Witness suits against elders in their own church right here in Spokane and across the country. In fact, there is one man that, Bill Bowden, that got 6,000 members in the last 3 years into his organization, Silent Lambs, all victims. So that's significant. What is your experience with the Jehovah's Witness?
Well, you know, Mark, Mr. Fitzsimmons is right. The Catholic Church has gotten a lot of attention and a lot of focus, and I think there's a perception that perhaps the problem exists in that church and not in other religious denominations, and I know firsthand that that's just not so. And I think that what we are going to see is the attention of the media is beginning to turn at other religious denominations and is going to focus on them. What we're talking about, Mark, is essentially religious organizations that cover up for child molesters. They don't report it to the police, they intimidate the victim into silence, and they essentially perpetuate the big lie, the big denial. And it's been a huge problem in this country for a long period of time, and it's now just beginning to come out. And it's a good thing. And if there's a message that should go out from this radio show to child sexual abuse victims, you no longer need to suffer in silence and shame. Come forward and get the help and healing that you need, because you've suffered too long, and we as a society are recognizing that we have ignored you, that we have shunned you, and that you have some serious issues and needs, and we are saying to you, come forward. And that's sort of the message that's gone out in the wake of the scandal in the Catholic Church, and people have come forward by the hundreds and thousands, and not just in the Catholic Church. Mark, when I got started doing this work about 7 or 8 years ago, it was a civil practice that was dedicated to using the civil justice system to help incest survivors and survivors of child sexual abuse. And, you know, I toiled in relative obscurity until about the last year, and all of a sudden now there's been a great deal of attention and focus on it. I first got started, my first case was involving a religious organization, was the Mormon Church. Since that time, I've picked up many other, I probably have over 100 clients in Mormon Church cases, Jehovah's Witnesses, Seventh-day Adventists, and of course many in the Catholic Church as well.
Tim, do you think that the Catholic Church, I mean, Mike and I were talking about this, and I made the statement, I don't know if it's based in any fact or anything that you've discovered or you've even concluded, but it seems like that the Catholic Church gets a lot of heat because they have a total connection to every church in the world and controlled by the Vatican, yet they don't really have written down policies for, you know, things like abuse. Is that inaccurate in the way I described it?
Well, no, but I think it's also accurate with respect to many of these other churches as well. And again, Mark, it's not so much that we're talking about carelessness or negligence. We're talking about the overt concealment of crimes.
Let's talk about that in Jehovah's Witness. Now, you know, man, I want to say this, Tim. I had a man last week who was an elder of the Jehovah's Witness Church, and he called in. His name was Mike. He sent me an email, and even though we had a kind of a very confrontational discussion about this, he was very forthright with sending me an email, sending, you know, here, go to our websites. We do have policies. But, you know, I've got this right in front of me right here, and I'm a little confused with the first two sentences of what if a child molester is some of the policy of child abuse. What if a baptized adult Christian sexually molests a child? Question mark. Is the sinner so wicked that Jehovah will never forgive him? Not necessarily so. I have a problem right now.
Yes, you've hit on something very important, and it's not just the Jehovah's Witnesses. There's similar belief systems in these other churches as well. It essentially equates the doctrine of repentance with a belief that if a person claims that he has repented, that it washes away his sins and that he is therefore no longer a danger to children. In other words, they literalize their belief and apply it to these experiences, and so where they will confront perhaps a fellow brother or elder in their church, and maybe he'll admit that in fact the allegations are true. They won't report it to the police. Instead, they'll deal with it internally through scripture and prayer, and of course you know how well that works with child molesters. And so there are more victims, more complaints. And again, it's all covered up and concealed and allowed to continue. In a case that we settled one individual, we settled for $3 million against the Mormon Church in Portland August of 2001. This Mormon high priest abused kids in seven different cities all over the country for a period of 15 years. And he was known, and what he was doing was known to the highest leadership of the church based in Salt Lake City. And in the course of doing that case, I discovered that there were hundreds of similar kinds of cases where they were not reported to the police. The church had internal documentation of complaints, just like in the Catholic Church. But again, they would hide behind the clergy exemption that exists in our mandatory reporting law and in the laws, mandatory reporting laws of other states as well, and not report it to the police. And so that's why it's so critical, Mark, that the legislature go back and fix these laws so that clergy can't hide behind these legal exceptions that have permitted to not turn these molesters over to police.
Well, Tim, let's ask the question. Excuse me. Let's ask the question right now. Why would we ever exempt the church from not reporting child molestation in their church? It seems bizarre that we would address it and exempt them.
Well, the history of our law in this state is a little curious. When our first mandatory reporting law was passed in 1971, clergy were included. And then in 1975, without any kind of legislative debate, it was deleted from the statute. And there's no legislative history. There doesn't appear to have been any debate. Somehow that got slipped in and passed without any notice or attention. And so since 1975, we've had a law in this state that has basically said, if you're clergy and you hear about abuse, if it's reported to you by a victim, you're under no obligation to report it to the police. You're not a mandatory reporter. Now, there's a bill that's been introduced by Representative Mary Lou Dickerson of Seattle, House Bill 1054, that will eliminate that exemption, but it still provides for communications learned within the confessional to be exempted from the requirement.
Why should that be exempted?
Well,
I'm great on hypotheticals, so let's give one. You go to the confessional booth and say, I am planning to assassinate a political figure, and they give the name, the location, and the date. Is that priest supposed to keep that information to himself?
Well, Mark, I would just say that I try, you know, in principle, I agree with you. Practically, perpetrators do not confess to their clergy. That's not how clergy are learning about it. Maybe one in 100. So if we can get a bill that does not exempt clergy, I'm not that concerned about information that's obtained in the confessional. It's been a tradition in our culture and in our law for many years, and I'm content to leave it alone. If it means we can get a bill that basically is going to allow us to prosecute and convict clergy who learn about it through third persons, parents, and so forth, because that's where they're learning about it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when you describe this. We all understand what you're saying, but I'm a little stuck on people that are supposedly of the highest moral, the moral values in the community, needing mandatory reporting. I don't even think we need mandatory reporting. They should do this because of who they are and what they represent. That shows just exactly how corrupt they are.
Well, I'm not going to go there, Mark. I mean, there are a lot of fine people of faith and so forth. But what
no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the people that hold the information that because there's no mandatory reporting, they simply don't do it.
I agree. I think that it's morally indefensible, and it ought to be legally indefensible as well.
I agree with that. We got to take a break, Tim. We're going to come back. And, you know, when we come back, I for all of you out there, because this is where you can really engage in this conversation, I want to know, in the Jehovah's Witness, especially, and Latter-day Saints, what is the situation with the parents discovering? What is the process of uncovering these child abuse? If the child tells the parents and the parents go to church, we've heard it about the Catholic Church in certain instances. I want to know about this. We're going to be right back. Listen to the Mark Furman Show on 920 KXLY.
You have the right to remain silent.
Except on this show.
Mark Furman is on your radio now.
Welcome back to the show. My guest is Tim Kosnoff. He's an attorney that has represented a lot of victims from various churches. Today we're talking about Jehovah's Witness. I know I have Mike on the line, and hang on there, Mike. I want to ask Tim one question before we go to you. Tim, when we took the break, I asked about parents. In the Jehovah's Witness situation, how do we learn of the child abuse?
Well, you know, children naturally, Mark, are ashamed, and they feel guilty, and they, generally speaking, don't report. But those that do disclose to a parent, what I find is a situation, and I've heard this story over and over again, they'll go to the elders in the church. In the case of the Jehovah's Witnesses, when they go to the elders will either insinuate or perhaps more directly intimidate them into not going to the police or otherwise disclosing to anybody else, Child Protective Services. And they intimidate the parents and the children with threats of excommunication from the church, from shunning, they're told that nothing can be done against the perpetrator because there hasn't been a second witness, and they have.
Is that their policy, Tim? That they need a second witness?
Their doctor,
or the perpetrator to admit?
To bring an accusation of any kind against another member, you have to have a witness. And of course, it's absurd in the case of child abuse because children are not abused in the presence of witnesses, generally speaking. And so this kind of religious belief comes, you know, right up against their secular responsibility to report, you know, allegations of child abuse to the police. And so I've heard stories like this, emails. I probably get 15 to 30 hits a week on Jehovah's Witness issues on my website. Bill Bowen of Silent Lambs says that he's spoken with over 5,000 victims within the Jehovah's Witnesses who report the same identical experience. We went to the elders. You know, they threatened us with excommunication and shunning if we told anybody. They said that there's nothing that can be done, that it would be going against God if they said anything further about it. And so I think you begin to get a feel for the kinds of organizations. These tend to be hierarchical, you know, top-down, male-oriented, or male-dominated religious organizations. You know, the power goes from the top down, but the money goes from the bottom up. And within that context, I've had so many clients who've told me things like, Tim, you know, when I was growing up, we never had a non-Mormon in our home, or we never had a non-Jehovah's Witness in our home. We never socialized with anybody who wasn't in our church. Our entire lives were consumed with church and church-related activities. And so the church is able to maintain a kind of control. And for victims to step outside and say, no, you're wrong, you know, I've been hurt and I've come to you for help, they face the prospect of not only being excommunicated from the only religion they've ever believed in, losing all of their friends, losing their entire social and religious community, being shunned by their own brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers, and it's just too much. But what it does is it effectively silences these people. And we're only now, because of what's happened, the attention that's been focused on the Catholic Church, beginning to see these people come forward. And I understand that you had an enormous response from your first radio show on that, and it doesn't surprise me a bit.
Well, we have a Jehovah's Witness elder, Mike. He's on the line right now. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hi.
Now, Mike, you called me last week, and I appreciate your email. I used those websites, and I will I will read another sentence from this very website that you gave me, watchtower.org. Depending on the law of the land where he lives, the molester may well have to serve a prison term or face other sanctions from the state. The congregation will not protect him from this. Sounds like they do, doesn't it, Mike?
Yeah, well, see, that's my point, and that's why I called in last week. First off, I apologize if I sounded confrontational last week.
I was confrontational. You were fine, Mike.
Okay, well, that's I didn't mean to. It was not my intention to be. I just took exception to what I was hearing. And I only caught a few minutes of it, so I didn't hear the whole show. And even what I've heard here just this afternoon, I some of what I heard is fine. I don't have any, I don't take any exception with it. But what I just heard is again getting away from what our actual policy is. Our policy is not to protect individuals. The sentence you read, the first sentence you read out of one of the articles that you were reading from, talked about repentance. What it's talking about is whether or not God can forgive an individual. It has nothing to do with our policy in dealing with those who are accused of child abuse. We do not protect child abusers. We don't in any way do that. Now, is that to say that there are some cases throughout the United States or throughout the world, for that matter, where mistakes have been made or not been made? I can't say. I'm not going to sit here and try and tell you there has or hasn't been. But as a policy, we do not do that. So that's what I was trying to get across.
I know, Mike, but the policy is, have you ever turned in an abuser?
I've never had to deal with it.
So you've never had a family member come to you? You've never had a family member come to, I mean, not a family member, but you never had parents of a child come to you?
No, I never. I personally have never had to deal with it. I do know that it has happened, and I do know, we do, unlike what you said last week, we do have training classes in schools, which we attend on dealing with this issue as well as hundreds of other issues that society is suffering from.
Then how do we have 6,000 Jehovah's Witnesses that have been victims that have not received justice and have to sue the church to get any recognition?
Well, you know, why people sue people, you know, Mark, I can't even speak to that. I go back to what I just said. There's for me to sit here and say that it hasn't happened would be foolish on my part. I can guarantee you that we are suffering from this problem the same as every organization in the world, and to sit here and say that we're immune from it would be foolish for me.
Well, I understand that, Mike, and I understand you're doing this in good faith, and I appreciate that, but you have to look at something. The policy that's written, that's fine, but do they violate? They certainly couldn't write a policy that they will hide child molesters. So, I mean, that being said, we have an attorney here we have an attorney here that actually represented people here in Washington that are Jehovah's Witness. Now, here's the policy. He just told you the policy is they need a witness other than the accuser.
Hold on a second. I understand what he's saying, but he also is coming at it from a different point of view. If we as Jehovah's Witnesses, if we were to say that we would protect those people, then I could fully understand that. If we were in fact hiding them from the law, I could fully understand your position. But you've read our policy there, and we do not do that. We don't protect individuals. And I'll take it a little further, because you probably haven't read all that I sent you. If an elder is accused of doing that, our number one, first off in all of this, our number one goal and responsibility is to protect the children. That is stated in writing.
Then why hasn't it happened?
Well, no. How do you know it hasn't happened? You're hearing cases from people who are, in fact, have a motive to file a lawsuit.
What's the motive, Mike?
Well, you know, each individual case.
What's the motive? So they can be excommunicated and shunned by the church, their entire family, and have their whole life turned upside down?
Well, no, that's not the motive for suing.
What's the motive?
Well, maybe money. Maybe.
Well, did you ever think the motive is they're getting raped by somebody in the church, and the motive is they want it to stop, so they tell their parents, the parents don't get any satisfaction from the church, and they have to go outside, then they get excommunicated?
Well, no, actually that's...
So you're discounting 6,000 people that we absolutely can give you the names of?
No, I'm not. I'm not discounting it. And
okay, so what happens with those 6,000 people if they can't get satisfaction in the church?
Well, hold on, Mark. Hold on. You're getting ahead here, and this is where we kind of got confrontational last.
Okay, well, let's what we do, we have to do is we're going to have to take a break now. I want you to stay on, Mike. Tim, stay with us. I think this is a good conversation. We've got somebody that knows what they're talking about here on both ends, not one of them being me. We're going to be right back. You're listening to the Mark Furman Show on 920 KXLY.
You have the right to remain silent.
Except on this show.
Mark Furman is on your radio now.
Welcome back. We're talking about the Jehovah's Witness. We have Mike, who's held on for us. I appreciate that. Tim Kosnoff, who's represented victims of not only the Catholic Church, Jehovah's Witness, and Latter-day Saints. I'm going to let Mike and Tim handle this a little bit. Tim, you heard Mike's response. Can you tell me how that is maybe something either Mike doesn't realize or is not willing to realize?
Well, I think Mike is telling it from his perspective, and he hasn't had a lot of experience with this. I'm telling you that I have seen and spoken with enough victims and heard the same story told over and over to know that this is a pattern and practice within the Jehovah's Witness. You know, every one of these churches that has this problem, they have a written policy, you know, and it can be found in some dusty filing cabinet. But that doesn't cut it. It's about making sure that your policy is understood and is being followed. And that has not taken place in organizations like the Jehovah's Witnesses. And I think in large part because it conflicts with this belief system that is based on repentance and also the second witness rule. And I think a lot of times perhaps it does leave some of the elders in these churches somewhat confused about what their responsibilities are. Do you obey the law of Jehovah, or do you obey the law of the land first? And so I think this is a matter of the law of the land coming up directly into conflict with this religious tradition within the Jehovah's Witnesses. And as our Supreme Court of the United States has told us, that in that situation, the supreme law of the land is going to trump the religious beliefs of a particular religious organization when it comes to the protection of children.
Tim, in this little amount of time we have left, let's focus on one thing. Mike, are you still with us?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, let's focus on one thing. Mike, is there a second witness rule within the church that you know?
Yes, there is.
Okay. Do you want to tell me why that's in place?
Well, as I mentioned to you Friday, and it has to do with scriptural principles, and it doesn't. It's more of an internal thing. It doesn't really affect, or should not affect, by our policy. It should not affect what happens with regard to the law of the land. The law of the land is a whole separate issue. We don't take exception from it.
Do you understand how it's used?
Do I understand? Yeah,
sure, you have to understand. Yeah. A child's parents come and say, my child's been raped, like a certain woman in Othello, Washington that we had on the show. She's been raped from age 4 to 11. Rape from 4 to 11, okay? There's our situation. The parents come in, and because they're reporting it, the elders that they go to will not go to the authorities, will not do anything about it. But if they go forward, they did get excommunicated. They did get shunned. Do you understand why?
Well, yeah, I take some exception to that whole story, and I'll tell you why.
It's got to be fact, not what you think, Mike, because we have depositions, and Tim is the attorney that represented that girl. So whatever you say should be fact.
That's fine. I'm telling you what our policy is. Like I said earlier.
No, we want to know about this case now. Tim,
I don't know much about that case.
Well, we don't have to know much. A little girl was raped by the very person that she trusted in the church. So
she and her parents had the option to go to the police. We would not stop that. We would not.
They did go to the police.
Okay,
they did go to the police.
So what?
You can't stop that. Yeah, Mike, you don't. You have no power.
No,
The church has no power except for the one thing that really influences people is being shunned by a village, being shunned by a church, being shunned by their own family members. That's powerful. Tim, is this how they get their control?
It's a huge part of it. When you tell a victim that you don't believe them or they misunderstood or that they'll hold an internal church court proceeding and deal with it that way, but not to go to the police, that if they don't have a second witness, they themselves are violating the beliefs of the church, that they're subject to church discipline, possible excommunication if they go against that. I mean, I've heard this over and over, Mark, my client's mouth to my ear. I've heard this story.
Let's let Mike answer one question. Mike, why do you need a second witness when a child's been raped?
Well, okay, what if somebody came up and accused you of doing that, Mark? Would you just accept that person was telling the truth?
No, but I'll tell you this. If I was alone with that child 60 or 70 times a year, I think I've got to account for 60 or 70 times, and I think the police should be investigating, not the church putting pressure. Now, so tell me this. Why does the church need a second witness?
Well, as I said, that's an internal thing. It has to do with whether or not we take judicial action with regard to what happens in the inside.
You have no judicial action.
No.
You have no power. This is a crime against a child.
I agree. And back up now. Slow down for a second. That child has the option to go to the police. Her and her parents should have went to the police. If they truly believe that happened, that should have happened. We have nothing to do with that. What I'm talking about is what happens to the person inside the congregation. It goes back to what I was trying to say before the last break. Our number one policy is to protect the child, period, end of story. The second thing is that if we have proof that the person did it, whether it be by confession or it be by two examples or possibly some other proof that may come up, that elder no longer qualifies, period, to serve as an elder.
Okay, let's stop there, Mike. Who in your church is qualified to do a sexual abuse investigation of a child?
That's up to the authorities.
Okay, Mike, I'm gonna give you a set of circumstances. Tim, I want you to respond to exactly what would probably happen. Mike, if you have somebody that comes forward and says, I have been abused, or in other words, they're telling their parents, and the parents come forward with the child, and the child says, yes, I've been raped, and describes it, and however she or he can do that, and describes that, and said, did anybody see it? And then you went to that person and said, well, I didn't do that, and there's no witness. Do you go to the police, Mike, or do you keep it to yourself?
Well, whose responsibility is it to go to the police?
Well, if you're an elder, Mike, it better be yours. Because you are in a place of leadership. It better be yours.
Mark, are you going to let me talk? Hold on.
We got to go. We're at the top of the hour. Mike, sorry, we got to go. Tim, thanks a lot for being on the show. We'll have you back, I'm sure.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
You bet. Take care. We're going to be right back. We're going to talk to Bill Tierney, former weapons inspector, talk about Colin Powell's accusations, claims, and evidence that he presented to the UN. We'll be right back. You're on to listen to the Mark Furman Show on 920 KXLY. We'll be right back.